Okay, something new today. Hi, everybody. Today's pre-accident podcast is brought to you by Underwriters Laboratory, Worker Health and Safety.
So we're excited to be the sponsor, the first sponsor for the pre-accident investigation podcast. Our business unit in Franklin, Tennessee, UL's Workplace Health and Safety, is getting ready to launch new content around the new view. It's e-learning content specific to the conversations that Todd has been sharing with you on a weekly and biweekly basis. We're talking about cultures of learning, cultures of early reporting, the new view, the new way of thinking, metrics, all the things that organizations are interested in implementing in their operations, but may need additional assistance to do that. So these are educational content that will be bundled together and can be shared with organizations.
All this at ulworkplace.com. Now, let's listen to the podcast.
There's still a lot of people that poo-poo it. Okay.
Hi, everybody. This is the Pre-Accident Investigation Podcast. I'm Todd Conklin, your host. I hope you're having a good time. Happy 2016 Otra Vez once again. I'm wishing you the best new year ever. So, we're deep in the middle of winter, and that's how it goes. January is always January. And I always have kind of mixed emotions. I don't know how you guys are. I always think the holidays are super fun. I enjoy the break. I usually do some adventure because there's some time in there, and it's a good time to do it. And then it's right back at it, and you get right in the groove. And then you got the kind of long haul until it gets warm again. And so you wait for that, but that's fine. I mean, that's a good way to do it. It's an interesting day-to-day for sure. A bunch of reasons it's interesting. You probably noticed some differences at the beginning of the podcast. That's good. That's normal. That's a part of how this works. And there's more stuff towards the end of the podcast as well that'll be a little different. But today we're going to take a deep dive into one of our long podcasts, the 30-minute podcast, and we're going to talk to Carrie Ussery. And Carrie is he's with Predictive Solutions, and he is the world-famous safety Carrie. And if you've ever, I don't know, looked at LinkedIn or gotten a blog posting, it's a pretty good bet you've seen something from safety Carrie, because safety Carrie is always writing up stuff about safety. I like him a lot because he gets all these guest columnists to write in and talk about stuff, and it's interesting. And Carrie and I had a great little discussion. It was a fun discussion. It's a discussion around this notion of prediction, and I don't know where you come in on this. We started talking about leading data. You know, I'm pretty strong-willed on the leading data thing. I've not cracked the code on leading data yet because I don't think it exists. I think if it did exist, we'd have it, but we don't have it, so it must not exist. Therefore, that's a pretty shallow logic, but nonetheless, we'll use it. It's just really hard to predict the future. But Carrie pushed me pretty hard, and he'll push you a little bit too, on how we think about data and are we collecting the right data to make the right predictions. And so the best thing to do, I think, is probably just get into this, see what you think, draw your own conclusions, but enjoy. And know that safety Carrie is there all the time, and there's tons of blog posts you can read, lots of good background. It's a good step. It's a good way to have another discussion around the new view of safety, and that's what we're here to do. So, again, happy new year. Enjoy this podcast, and I'll talk to you on the backside of this very interview. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here is safety Carrie.
Well, my conclusion was an interesting one.
What was it?
It was, it doesn't matter if you collect leading indicators, what leading indicators you collect, or anything like that. I said, to me, the only leading indicator is, are you doing anything to try to improve with the information that you have at hand?
But that's, I think that's really good. So when you think about it, like this, Jim Barker, the guy from Dalhousie that talks about organizational complexity, he says you don't ever measure complex organizations at a point in time. You only measure how they're vectoring.
Correct.
So is the organization getting better? Or I guess the counter to that, is it getting worse or is it staying the same? And so
right.
I do think, to be fair, the ability to assess the vector, the direction the organization is moving, are we learning and improving? that becomes a really important indicator. And that, I think, probably is as close to a leading metric as you can think of, but it's not a metric in the traditional sense. It's not a metric. It's not a measurable. It's actually kind of more of a compass.
Agreed. Totally.
Now, is a compass a metric?
I would say yes. It's a direction, right? I mean,
I'm asking. I don't have any hidden agenda. Well, I always have some hidden agendas, but no hidden agendas here.
Absolutely.
So introduce yourself to us. Tell us who you are and why we want to listen to you for the next half hour, because you're a very interesting person. So I'm kind of excited about this.
Awesome. So my name is Carrie Ushry. I'm a process improvement leader with a company called Predictive Solutions. So what is a process improvement leader? It's somebody who helps organizations improve their process. And I have an interesting theory on process. But before I get to that, let me continue to introduce myself. I love to get off on tangents quickly. My background is safety. So I'm 20 plus years as a safety professional. I started in the nuclear power program for the Navy. So you don't get much safer than that. The highly reliable organizations, White and Sutcliffe, love that book. You get a healthy respect for safety when not just your life is on the line, but entire floating cities, the life is on the line. And then I went to a power plant from there. I went to a waste-to-energy plant in upstate New York. So as soon as I got out of the Navy, I went right on board. They were building the plant, so I kind of got in on the bottom floor. And I had an option. I could stay and become a shift supervisor, which is, you know, a management line supervisor, or go into EH&S. And I'm like, I love EH&S at the time because it got me from shift work to days. But then I kind of learned the trade. I got heavily involved in the VPP PA. We went through the VPP PA, the OSHA Volunteer Protection Program certification. So we became a star site. So I really learned a lot that way, a lot of good networking with other organizations on safety. I became an officer in the VPP PA. And then I did that for about 13 years. I was a special government employee with them and did with OSHA. And did site certifications with them through VPP PA. And then I went into construction. Good friend of mine moved along and he vacated a position. So I went from a single site to a business unit safety director for a large construction company. Did construction for a number of years. And that's when I got introduced with the company. At the time it was DBO2, but now it's Predictive Solutions. So I used their software in the field, became really enamored, I guess is a good word, but really interested in the leading indicator side of it and the process improvement side. And I've been with Predictive Solutions now for 8 years doing work. It's more of a consulting work of, again, it's not, we just talked a minute ago, it's not getting organizations to collect specific leading indicators. To be honest with you, the challenge lies in what does this information mean and what can I do with it to improve? Like we just said, what is the compass? Are we going in the right direction? And kind of going back to process improvement. The interesting thing to me is I kind of have a theory, and that is we build these health and safety plans. A plan is, hey, this is what we'd like to have happen. And the plan has all these rules and regulations and activities. If we do these things, we won't hurt anybody. But what I think actually happens is in the field, you have a lot of things that don't necessarily gel with that plan. And it's everything from, do I even know what the plan, all the details of the plan? Do I know everything, all the minutiae of it, and can I follow it? That's number one. So have I been trained and do I understand it? Number two is, I have opposing forces, so to speak, everything from cost to schedule to productivity to biases to I've done it 30 years and I've never gotten hurt, so I'm going to do it this way. The fact that you don't always get hurt working unsafely kind of builds into that. I don't necessarily have to follow all the rules. So to me, it's you're trying to get alignment between what I call the plan and the process. The plan is the paper, right? What do you want to do to prevent injuries? And the process is, what are we actually doing out in the field? And the closer you can get an alignment, either change the rules to reflect what we're actually doing, let's figure out why we're not doing it and address it.
In your opinion, who owns the process?
It depends on what process we're talking about. Everything from a worker's responsible for the things that he's in control of. I think line supervisor really makes or break a lot of it. But I think everybody has their part to play in it. It's like, let me give you a corny analogy. It's an orchestra, right? It takes all the instruments to kind of get a concert going. You can't deny the fact that management plays a huge part, right? Everything from the culture and the relationships, right? Do I induce fear? Do I induce stress? Do I support people? Everything from the line supervisor, which is, am I getting competing or overriding direction on a certain aspect, let's say productivity, over safety or shortcuts allowed, to the worker, which is, they, to me, in a group environment, I think personal, it's a tough one because I've seen some interesting behavioral studies over the years, and no matter what I want to do, sometimes sound human reasoning is thrown out the window in a group environment. Sometimes we do things that we would never do in another environment or individually. It's kind of that group think type mentality. So I gave you a really poor answer, which is everybody.
No, I don't think it's a poor answer. I mean, I've just thought about it a lot lately because I think traditionally we saw workers as process users.
Yes.
Right. You know, if the process is good and the workers are obedient, then the work happens successful. Well, I mean, I don't even mean obedient to be, it is a little smug sounding. I'll give you that. But I mean, if the workers do as they're told or as they're trained to do. Right. And I'm wondering if that's changing because really the more I look at it, workers are really process owners. I mean, it's like reporting. All reporting at the end of the day is voluntary.
Sure.
Even mandatory reporting is voluntary.
Of course it is.
Right.
If you want good information. Sure.
Right. Right. And so when I look at processes, I think where we once thought the worker was kind of this dumb process. Dumb's a bad word too, but this sort of not thoughtful process user, a not creative process user. Maybe that's a better way to say that. Now we're starting to realize that actually workers are constantly in these goal conflicts, and they're constantly have to be creative, and they're constantly having to make decisions, and they're constantly having to sort of fill in for insufficiencies that are in the process, and they're really more process owners than they are process users.
I could agree more, because when you really think about it, we're asking them to deliver a product, and we're asking them to deliver a product sometimes, come hell or high water. I need it done. and we have more workers than we have people to monitor the work. Meaning, let's say the line supervisor owns safety. Well, to an extent, he needs to help the process owner, like you said, the worker, he needs to give him the tools necessary in order to do that. But I'm totally with you. It is the worker who has to overcome those conflicts. And they are often competing, and whether it's direct or indirect, because even if you don't say, I want productivity over safety, sometimes it ends up being that way through pride, through incentives, through people's expectations. Hey, I thought that's what you wanted. So I think communication becomes key at this point. To say, this is what I want, this is what I don't want. And it doesn't have to be the command and control. And I think that's really going out the window. Is that cultural? Meaning, are new generations getting away from that and not responding well to it versus some of the older, the boomer generation, they were accustomed to it? Is it because we're doing, you know, fewer workers in the environment. We're asking them to be more innovative. That's an interesting question. It could differ organization to organization.
Except I think it's – I mean, pulling the string on this is – so I do think it's – I think it's generational. I think it's changing. And I think every generation has a different relationship with authority than the generation before them did, until they get older, and then that relationship to authority changes. I think we actually ask workers to be much more knowledge-based than – or knowledge workers is my, maybe a better way to say that than we once did. I think workers have to think. They've always had to think, but I think they have to think technically, and they have to interface with systems that quite honestly didn't exist at all 20 years ago. I was getting a new phone, and I noticed the way they managed customer service – is that somebody met me at the door with an iPad, and then every person had an iPad, and they sort of sent the message around that a customer needed help. Now, I will tell you, this was a large cell phone company that starts with a V, and it took them 25 minutes for some guy to quit leaning on a cabinet and come over to help me. But that's a different podcast. I mean, we can talk about that later. But mm-hmm. I thought where once they would have probably incentivized these guys to sell telephones by selling telephones – they've now clearly got a point of service system, a process that actually manages who's next and how that process happens. And it's all on this iPad, right? It was a horrible process, but it was certainly computerized, and they all got to carry these little iPads around. And I think that change is – I mean, it's certainly worth noticing. And you've been in the business a long time. I mean, you've seen a lot of these changes happen.
Well, sure. I mean, a good example, too, is if you think back in the industrial age, a person did a specific task. And it was sometimes repetitive. And it wasn't very, let's say, encompassing. Versus now, you have a person who could be asked to do a lot of different things. Everything from dealing with HazCom and chemicals to lockout, tagout to, you know, the broad spectrum of the hazard within a workplace, those could all be part and parcel to an individual, even a low level within the organization. And I think things, interestingly enough, I think that shift has happened. But let's think about how... And I hate training because some people look at training differently. But we train people, let's call it on-the-job training, for their task. What is it that I'm paying you to do? And we spend a great deal of time doing mentoring and getting other people. I mean, it could be sink or swim to start, but we spend a lot of time teaching people their craft on how to do those things. Yet, when we look at safety training, looking at the risks within that work, and especially as it becomes more complex, I don't think we're doing a good enough job to spread the knowledge, not just the work knowledge, especially as you got a broader task base, but the safety knowledge or the knowledge of the hazards. And I'll give you a good example, because one of the things we did in the Navy was we did qual cards. In order to get from one rank to the next, you had to do two things. You had to get the knowledge, meaning you had to demonstrate the knowledge. That's through learning and testing. But then you had to demonstrate that knowledge. And there was a lot of different ways that the organization did that. You had to show the demonstration so that they would call you in a room and give you scenarios, or they would walk you through the facility and say, let's look at this and you tell me about that, which is basically another way of testing. Did you learn it on paper, but can you actually apply it out in the field? And I thought that was very interesting. And the reason that I liked it is because they broke it down into bite-sized chunks. You know, the whole adage, how to eat an elephant. And I think safety needs to be done that way, because I think we're trying to rush people through. You know, you look at a job site orientation. You know, I go onto a nuclear facility, what do I go through for orientation? And especially that's site specific. It may be enough to scare me, or it may be enough for me to roll my eyes and go, okay, now what? So I really think we need to take that approach, that bite-sized chunk approach to safety. And that is, let me teach you the basics, you know, to keep you safe, but let me start a tutorial to teach you more about these hazards, more in depth. It's the concept we're kind of pushing is, you know, what does good look like, right? Can you recognize good, or can you recognize not good readily, not just for you, but for others within the facility?
Can you chunk down operations in a complex organization? I mean, as complexity increases, is it harder or easier to take things in bite-sized pieces?
Well, I think you... I understand what you're saying, but I mean, how else would you teach people? Otherwise, we do the, I call it the, I can't really show you because we're Skyping, but, you know, I give you the blessing sign and say, Todd, you are now a safety observer.
Anointed as a safety observer.
There you go. I anoint you a safety observer. I just put you through a 4-hour, an 8-hour, or at best a 30-hour class. And all that complexity that we just said exists, I just distilled and anointed you. You now know everything. And we can't, it's no different than a health and safety plan. I've seen volumes of health and safety plans within our organization. And yet the training that people get on that you know, huge volumes of rules and regulations is a small class. Right, or repetitive classes. Hey, OSHA says you have to take this class once a year or whatever. So I think it has to be a continuous learning process. It can't be a, hey, you know this, and that's all you need to know. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, the question I guess that I'm curious about, because I like what you're saying, is then how do we manage capacity for variability, for off-normal events? So when things don't go the way they're supposed to go, and I promise you, Carrie, if you say stop work, I'm going to yell or scream, yell and scream. When things don't go the way we thought they would go, what do we do with that? Where's that capacity come from?
Well, I think it's no different than today, and that is you deal with it as best you can with the knowledge and experience that you have. And we hope and we pray we make it through that instance. But what we're not doing is, can we recognize that it was an off-normal event, or I forgot what you just termed it. And do we share that within an organization? Do we communicate it even internally to, you know, coworkers or my boss, saying, hey, this just happened. It wasn't supposed to happen this way. Here's what I did. Was that the right thing? So I think, you know, from safety, I think we've distilled it down to I know I've seen in some of your presentations, Todd, the spear, right? The sharp end of the stick at the worker level.
The pointy stick, yes.
The pointy stick. So in my article today, I kind of looked at three different rings on that spear. The first one is the easy one. That is the observation level, right? The sharp end of the stick, we can kind of see observations, conditions and behaviors, for example. But then let's step back in the up on the grip of the spear, and then it's the operations type things. What can we see? The operations things are what are we doing operationally that either hinders or helps safety? And then even further up the non-pointy end of the stick is the systems type things. And that is the culture, the design of the facility, which there's another podcast right there. Those types of things of what can we control at that level that you know, if we fix, you know, won't even totally not have to worry about some of the conditions and behaviors because we'll have addressed it at the design level. So I think when we look at it like that, I think one of the cultural things or one of the systems thing is the term that I've heard and I've seen, especially if you're going to Europe, that's really big in there in Canada, is the psychosocial aspects. And to me, stop work is not really where I was going with it. I was going with addressing the psychosocial so that communication flows. The psychosocial to me is one of the big things is relationship building. Do I have a good relationship with my, especially my boss? Let's talk management. Let's talk my frontline supervisor. Do I have a good enough relationship with him to say, hey, I noticed this. This is what I did. I'm not sure if I did the right thing, you know, because that, if there's any kind of fear or any kind of issue there, I wouldn't feel comfortable talking about that. And then can we put it out in the open? And then can we raise it up the flagpole? Because I've seen within organizations huge catastrophic events that happens at a local level, right, that never get shared beyond that local level within the same organization. So why is that, Todd? Is that, I, you know, the air and the dirty laundry, I get, but I don't want to learn to the point of I would rather save face than, you know, than hurt somebody. That's
well,
what
but I think if we make it wrong to fail, so if we make the target zero, right, and so failure is wrong, failure is sort of morally wrong. If we make it wrong to fail, then I'm never going to tell you if I fail and can get away with it.
Absolutely. If we can't root that out, and I know a lot of people have done work on that. David Marks, I don't know if you've seen his work, the Whack-A-Mole.
I have. Actually, David was just on the podcast, and he talked about his new book, which is called Dave Subs. But yeah, Dave and I have been friends for many, many, many years. We argue a lot for many years, but we're also very good friends.
Yeah. Did you tell him to get off of the litigious side and go for the cultural side?
So he's an interesting cat because, you know, he's an attorney and an engineer.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense.
So, I mean, it's pretty hard to get him out of that linear thinking. But I have really gotten him so he no longer talks about risky choices. The word choices really bothered me.
Agreed. Yeah. When human error – or when error, especially human error, becomes a criminal offense, we're doomed, right? Because we're going to continue making the same mistakes and we'll continue to blame them on the same things, which are the wrong things. I saw an interesting article of all the biases that we have when we go to do these assessments or these incident investigations. It's a wonder we come up with anything resembling facts at the end due to all the biases that we have.
Oh, you're right. You're right. And even facts is kind of a biased notion. facts are completely manipulated by sort of the point of view you have of the event, how you choose to look at the event. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So what's exciting and new? What are you thinking about next? What's interesting you? What's making your blood pump?
As our company name implies, it's a predictive modeling. I'm very thrilled that we've done a tremendous amount of work in that area. But interestingly enough, it's huge outside of safety when you look at it. I mean, is it Eric Silverman? I think that's his name. Is using predictive modeling to figure out who's going to win what elections, and he's tremendous at it. Amazon and Target and Netflix and all of those are using predictive modeling to get your money.
And it's working.
Moneyball, right? The sports is using it tremendously and it's working. We saw Brad Pitt in that great Moneyball movie. But when it comes to safety, we're just scratching the surface. And there's so much data out there. But interestingly enough, let's talk about this, which is how we've financial, they've collected a lot of this information. And if you look in finances, they've talked leading lagging indicators for, you know, a great long time. So really just getting on board with that. But most of the information that we have as a community, as a safety community, is who got hurt and how bad is it? That's the information that most of us have. And interestingly enough, why is that? Well, OSHA requires us to have these OSHA injury rates. So everybody does that because it's consistent. I can ask you your injury rate. I don't know where you work, but if you give me a number, I can compare it to mine in my head. So we have that. So when we talk can we get anything from a leading side? As you said, leading is lagging, but can we get anything? I call it pre-incident, right? Anything pre-incident to me is a leading indicator. Nothing bad has happened yet. I have the opportunity with this, armed with this information, I could go prevent an injury. But when you look at Watson is a great example. Watson, the supercomputer, beat the Jeopardy champions. It's now being used, if you Google it, it's now being used by doctors. And it's interesting. It's not replacing a doctor. What it's doing is it's a tool, an extra tool that basically says, look, I'm a doctor. I'm going to make mistakes. Let me go and I'll get your information, Todd. I'll give you a diagnosis. I'll plug in all that information and Watson will give me a diagnosis. And if they match, we're great. But if they don't match, then maybe I miss something as a human. And that's really what we're talking about from a predictive standpoint is, can we use the information we're collecting and take the human element out of it? And there's been some interesting studies on, you know, not just the biases, but what we do with the information and the decisions that we make with the information can be flawed. So can we take that and provide tools, better analytic tools, better predictive tools, to the safety professionals or for the organizations that can help them make better decisions and prevent more injuries. So we're going there. We're getting there. It's just, can we get people collecting similar data and start getting some more correlation, so to speak, of, hey, if this this information is a good compass, like we said earlier, it's a good indicator on the vector you're on. If this is telling me you're going in the wrong direction based on, you know, the information that I'm getting.
So you're telling me safety could be either bullish or bearish.
Correct. Absolutely. Yes.
That's a very interesting way to look at it. Now, you have a pretty active blog, right? I mean, you have a really strong web presence. How can people find your blog and read your stuff?
Sure. My name is Kerry. So Safety Kerry, if you look up Safety Kerry, it's the blog is there. It's on the Predictive Solutions website. And interestingly enough, I found interesting people like you, Todd, all over the globe who've contributed. It's not just me writing articles. I've gotten people from interesting people, Canada, Norway, England, Australia, and then all over the U.S. So a lot of different people, a lot of interesting viewpoints. Ireland, too. A gentleman, Liam, from Ireland as well. Who've contributed to the blog, and it's everything from leading indicators to the safety community as a whole. A lot of things are certainly geared towards leading indicators and the differentiation between leading and lagging, and I like those terms. And the article that I just wrote today for Safety and Health Magazine was what is the safety leading indicator, and. And like you said, all leading indicators are lagging because they've already happened and you're just trying to use that information. But to me, it's no different than the best analogy I have is health and weight loss, right? All my health information is lagging, right? I know if I take my weight, it is what it is. I can't do anything about it, but it is a weight at this time and I can compare it to my BMI and I can compare it to my my physical and my blood work and stuff like that. And I know the direction that I need. To me, a lagging indicator, and it goes back to me, it's not the collection of lagging indicators or what I collect, it's what I do with it. So think about the analogy of this weight loss, right? If I stand on my scale every day and take my weight, that's a collection of leading indicators. but if I don't do anything and I keep eating cheeseburgers and not exercising, nothing's going to change.
What a terrible analogy. Terrible, terrible. Man, Kerry, this was great. Thanks for your time.
All right, so Safety Kerry, Todd.
Safety Kerry. Just Google Safety Kerry. So I think the idea that your safety program is either bullish or bearish is a very interesting thought experiment. I actually think there's quite a bit to that. It seems interesting to me that you can look and see if you're on an upswing, safer, more reliable operations, downswing, not as safe, bearish operations, things aren't going as well. And you do swing, you adjust, the pendulum moves back and forth. And I think that idea, related to all the things that really Kerry talked to us about, is a pretty interesting idea. The idea that there's a single measurable metric is very seductive. I mean, it's totally sexy. It's, gosh, wouldn't that be great? You could measure the X factor and just figure out where you are. I think actually the complexity of our work sort of causes that to be pretty elusive. It's never going to happen. I mean, we're just not going to find it. But it is seductive. And the government, golly, governments all over the world, the fact that you actually make us measure stuff that doesn't really have much value drives a lot of really crap behavior in the process. And that's something that we ought to talk about. And if you're listening, government people, and I know you are, NSA, FBI, CIA, I know you're listening to this podcast. If you are, think about what it is we talk about, because actually we measure things that don't make us better. We measure our ability to be safe by counting the number of people we hurt. And that just seems goofy at every level. January, my friends, it's here. Enjoy all your presents, all your new gizmos, your shirt, those socks, that sweater, all those things that you love, because January is cold and long and cold and long, unless you're in Arizona or South Texas or someplace like Florida where it's not that cold or long. But for us, it's pretty cold, and it's looks like it's going to be kind of a wet one. But I'll know more about that as we progress through. Have a great day, man. As always, go out and learn something new. Have a bunch of fun, and for goodness sakes, be safe.
There's still a lot of people that poo-poo it.